but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Got a really different interview coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Joe Moglia will be joining us. He is the former head coach at Coastal Carolina. He grew up in New York, and he's a kid from Brooklyn or the Bronx, and he ended up coaching at Dartmouth and then decided he wanted to go to Wall Street, and then he became the CEO of TD Ameritrade. And then he decided 25 years later, he would go back to football. Coastal Carolina eventually hired him as the head football coach. He'd been out of football for 25 years, but he had been a CEO. And we'll talk to Moglia later in the show about that, because, you know, part of being a head coach is being a CEO. Trent Bray, Oregon State football coach, here to talk about that, among other things, joining us. Could you ever see yourself working as a CEO in another profession? Because that Joe Moglia later in the show, former Coastal Carolina coach, he did that. He went to Wall Street.
Yeah, I could not see myself doing that, no.
And what would you be doing? If I said football didn't exist, Trent Bray, little Trent Bray never found football, what would you be doing?
That is a good question. I don't think I've ever even thought about that. I'd probably be doing something manual labor.
I bet you'd be a firefighter. You kind of have, you know, I think you could be, you're kind of an outdoorsy guy, are you not?
Yeah, I am.
I think firefighter, that's what I would go with. Did you always put football player or football coach down when you were a kid in elementary school and they said, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or was there ever any other answer?
No, it was. It was always that, just with my dad and always being around it my whole life. That's what I wanted to do since I was very young.
All right, you're in it now, and yeah, it's been a rough stretch, obviously a rough week. You had to let somebody go. Can you maybe speak about that a little bit? You have that meeting with your special teams coach, and you've got to do the worst part of coaching probably is the personnel part, and you've got to tell somebody, hey, this isn't working out. How did that go for you? How did that conversation go in general?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because, I've known Jamie for a long time, and he's been a really good coach for a long time. Sometimes it just doesn't work. Every coach has had a stop like that, and just evaluating the whole season and where we were at, went in there. And to be honest, he kind of expected with how things had gone that he wasn't totally shocked by that. And we had a good conversation, and, it was hard to do though.
Loyalty is so important in, and you preach that, not just, with your staff, but with your players. And then there comes a point where you're like, hey, man, this is the most, it's a disloyal act. Hey, I got to let you go. It just flies in the face of that. Is that something that causes you lost sleep, or, can you ever prepare yourself as a head coach to do that stuff?
I don't know if you can prepare yourself to do that. It does go against kind of who I am, kind of your loyalty thing. And I don't believe one person is the reason for things going wrong. I also have this job where that is my job to do things like that. So I gotta kind of swallow some of my beliefs a little bit and do what's best for this place.
People keep asking me, they go, hey, what's going on? And I said, look, this team has played well enough to have 3 wins and yet has played poorly enough to have none. What is the simple answer to that in your mind right now? And then we move on, but 6 games through, what's the simple answer to what hasn't equated?
We've been in position, and in 3 games for sure. Like you said, we've been in position to make plays to win the game and haven't made them. I think last week was a kind of the culmination of all that. We have 3 drives at the end of the game inside the 25, come up with 0 points. We have open guys we don't hit. We're on the 1-yard line on 2nd and 1 and don't get a yard. It's that's kind of been the season, just close enough in position to do what we want to do and not getting it done.
Trent Bray with us, Oregon State coach. As you're trying to get that yard, second down, third down, fourth down, I can't see the eyes of the players in that offensive line. But there comes down, there's a moment of will involved in this where it's like, hey, you got to move the other team 36 inches here. Can you do that? Do you see it in their eyes in that moment, or is there a timeout that's needed where you grab some guys and pull them together and be like, we need a yard, guys? Or can you afford in that moment to say that? Is it unspoken?
No, it spoke. We actually had time in between. I think it was going into the third down where we were, we need a yard. Like, let's bow up, you know, pad level, move them. They were fired up. Like, I mean, it was not a lack of them wanting to do it. It didn't take place.
Give us an idea. You know, you've had some great individual performances, and I think so often it becomes sort of this slippery slope where everybody just talks about everything that's gone wrong. Let's talk about some things you see on film or maybe with your guys that you go, this guy's having a great year and no one's talking about it. Who comes to mind when I say that?
The one no one's talking about, well, they're all talking about Trent, obviously. Yeah. I mean, he's having a heck of a year. But, there's guys, you know, I think up front, a guy like, you know, Tavita and Jacob Schuster are guys that have played really well that kind of go unseen just to the nature of their position. I think Dexter Foster started to turn into the player I thought he was going to be at linebacker. Aiden Sullivan, short menu, but Cornell Hatcher has had his moments. He needs more of those moments. There's guys that have had moments and spurts, and which is great to see. But the guy that shows up every week is Trent. That's probably the guy that you'd say that's what everyone needs to look to.
Saturday, you get Wake Forest coming to town. What do you see on film with Jake Dickert's team?
Yeah, they're real talented. They're real talented on defense. They fly around. They play hard. They got good skill, in the secondary, and they're big up front. Offensively, they got really good skill players, receivers, and then the quarterback's pretty special.
I am looking at, the teams left on the schedule. I'm looking at opportunities. There's some games here that I go, Oregon State should win these games. And I might be, maybe I'm the last person that, outside of your locker room who's saying this team can win. But I think you got a shot to win three or four of these down the stretch. Do you regroup? How do you regroup? What is the message to the team? Can it just be, let's go 1-0 this week? Or do you have to do something bigger because guys naturally will get discouraged?
Yeah, I think it's, one, it's staying consistent to the culture and the message, number one. And then I think that's when it has to be at its strongest, is when times are bad. It's easy for things to be great when you're winning and things are good. And then there's a challenging part. Like, I challenge the coaches, I challenge myself, and I challenge the players. We need to do more. Every person in this organization needs to do more and push themselves to be better. And so that was the challenge to everyone here.
You're taking some heat in the recruiting area. I know you don't want to talk about specific guys. You're not allowed to. But what can you say to your fan base about the recruiting effort in general, and how much does 0-6 hurt you in that area? 6-0, it's an easier sell.
Well, there's no question that 0-6, and then the things that they read online about, a lot of it's just uncertainty. Especially with what's happened in the last couple of days, it's don't know if, I'm going to be here. Don't know, because that's what they're reading. So that's caused a lot of it. Obviously you worry about the record and, do I want to go there and they're, be 0-6. I think that goes through young people's mind. But I think, the recruiting effort up until that point, going into the new conference, we were at the top of that until the last couple of decommitments. But I feel good about what we've done. We have not helped ourselves on the recruiting trail by our performance on the field.
Now, you've talked a little bit on the show about the general manager position. Mario Cristobal was on earlier in the week, and he says, I don't know if you need an NFL guy because that's, a salary cap thing, but you certainly need somebody who's in tune with the football program. If you could just step back as the CEO of your program, you know, how helpful would it be to have a general manager long term? I know Kyle's out, but, you know, the plan moving forward, what in your mind is necessary? Because part of me is saying Trent Bray's busy enough coaching. You need another body there that is familiar with negotiating and roster building to work with him.
There's no question. That is a full-time job in itself. Not only, you know, the scouting of players at other teams, at other universities. You know, it's really like an NFL front office where you got to have someone that's working in that world every day, 24/7. So there is a need for that position.
Trent Bray with us, Oregon State coach. You know, that conversation that Scott Barnes has with you, obviously you make a decision that, you know, you're going to make a change on special teams. Does he say anything else to you? I mean, is there any other direction that he gives you input that you're willing to share publicly about, you know, where the focus and where the scrutiny is right now from your boss?
Nothing I'd probably share publicly.
I know you probably, I try to put myself in your shoes and I go, God, I'd be analyzing and overanalyzing. Is there a danger in that in your position? And do you have to just say, I got to focus on what I can control today?
Yeah, that's all I can control. Trying to control, you know, the outside world, what people think or some sort of narrative isn't going to help us get to where we need to go. It's not going to help me at all. It's trust and belief in what you do and who you are and the people around you, and then just digging in even deeper when things aren't going good and trusting in those things.
How do you handle special teams? You know, I know formally you have somebody take it over, but how are you handling that in practice with restructuring that assignment?
Yeah, so Coach Rob Akey has taken it over. He's the head of it, and then with position coaches, everyone's, again, doing more and helping out, you know, more in the team's area than they probably were before, which should be a necessary thing anyway.
Yeah, I think, you know, in that area, there's got to be some motivation from you to be like, hey, I want the best special teams unit in the country this week. Like, can we correct? How energy-wise, how are you guys looking in practice? What's the feel?
It's been good, and I've kind of said it all year long, but it's true. These guys have done a great job of every week, whether, you know, the outcome hasn't been what we wanted, they still show up and work during the week. There's been no hanging of their head. There's been no attitude problems. They go to work. They're coachable. It's enjoyable to be around them. And this is a unique thing because I've been, you know, other times in my past where you haven't had the season you want, and that hasn't been the case. So I've really been impressed with that part of these guys.
Offensively in the Fresno State game, I thought, gosh, they look good. I like the creativity, good plan, execution was there. You know, in special teams it was a disaster. And, you know, you said it better than anybody, right? It was just like, oh my gosh, you can't snap the ball. I think it cost you that game. And, you know, fast forward to Houston, I thought you were good enough on offense. I thought you were good enough on defense. You had some nice moments on defense, but you couldn't kick a field goal. Again, it's a special teams thing. The Appalachian State game was a little different. I mean, I think if you get the field goal early, it changes the complexion of the game and some of your possessions later. You might have kicked a field goal instead of going on fourth down with, you know, or Malik might not have thrown that ball up for grabs in the end zone. I still don't know what he was doing there. And then, you know, you have a chance to get maybe six more points. Maybe now on fourth down at the 1 yard line, you're kicking a game-winning field goal. I mean, it's so much of the little things that begat the big things, right? Like, it's just a little thing sport. It's just like any other sport. You got to hit the cutoff man in baseball. You got to block the guy in front of you. How do you impart that message as a coach when it's just week to week? It seems like it's little things that are getting you.
Yeah, it's been hard from the special team standpoint because it does change. The field goal thing does change how you know, of what you call and how you react when you're down there. You know, you can't, you know, do some certain things because you can kick a field goal and get 3 points. So it makes it every play that much more important, which makes it difficult. But it is, and that's what I think Coach Akey's done a real good job of. And he has a, you know, a long background of being a head coach, being a coordinator, doing all those things. But he's really, really stressed the fundamental technique of how to do things and why on teams why, at every position, but why that's so important and why that leads to either losing or winning.
Going back to late in that Houston game, thought you guys got conservative late on a couple of drives, and you know Houston figured something out on offense themselves. But is that your offensive coordinator play calling, or are you in his ear going, "Hey, we need to take some clock off here"? How much in Ryan Gunderson's ear are you as a head coach?
No, I try to leave Ryan alone and let him do it. I think there were a couple things. I think one, we were at before that, the last couple drives, we were running the ball extremely well. And that was how we were moving the football. And so I think there was just a belief, hey, we're moving the ball and these guys on the ground, let's continue to pound them and wear them out. And then, you know, that kind of flipped, that ability to do that. And then there were some other things that I don't need to talk about in public, but that kind of led to the offense changing a little bit there at the end.
Is it more a coaching point, or is it more there was an execution issue?
There's some execution issue, yeah.
Okay. Trent Bray with us. All right, look, you got Jake Dickert and Wake Forest. You know, you obviously need a W. It'd do a lot for you guys down the stretch. Good luck to you, and thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
I appreciate it.
All right, there he goes. Trent Bray, Oregon State coach. Little things. I said it last week. I've played on good teams, and maybe you have too, even at high school or small college level. And I played on good teams. And the good teams, regardless of what level you play at, good teams do little things right. Good teams in college football do a lot of little things right. And so when I see sloppy, disorganized play in small ways, procedural calls, they're not lined up right, illegal substitution, get a field goal blocked, have a bad snap. You see symptoms everywhere. They cost you in ways that it's not a dollar for dollar or pound for pound comparison. Oregon State did not look prepared in the season opener. It raised eyebrows. In week two, it was an unmitigated disaster on special teams. They could not snap the ball. Fresno State probably shouldn't be 5-0, but I'll tell you what Fresno State did. Fresno State took advantage of every mistake Oregon State made and made them pay, and that's what a good team does. Then comes an unwinnable game at Texas Tech. I think Texas Tech's going to the playoff. I think Oregon's going to the playoff. Those are not winnable games, but they get Houston at home. Should have been a W. Their most impressive complete performance of the season, but they can't kick a bleeping field goal. They can't block for a field goal attempt. Then comes a disappointing start at Appalachian State, followed by a wild scramble, followed by some puzzling quarterback play from Malik Murphy. You know, he throws the ball up for grabs in a situation where you're like, what is he doing? He's doing because he's trying to do too much. He's throwing the ball in the end zone going, hell, it's better than us trying a field goal. And he's throwing it up for grabs. You know, we're not going to get a field goal here. So let me just throw an interception. And in the end, it's puzzling to me that you're on the 1 foot line and you got three cracks and you can't do it. You can't move the ball 24 inches, 36 inches, 12 inches, whatever it needed to go. And in the end, you are 0-6. You deserve to be 0-6 if you haven't done the little things right. Here comes Wake Forest. Steven, I think Wake is pretty good. They're 3-2. They got a win over Va Tech. They lost a close game, overtime game to Georgia Tech. They've been in games. This is a decent ACC team. Wouldn't surprise me if Oregon State's in this game, but I'm not picking Oregon State to win this game.
Are they better than Houston? I don't think that they are. I think Houston's a better team. And so I think the way that they played against Houston,
gives you a little hope.
If you're an optimistic person, you think, okay, well, maybe they can compete in this game against Wake Forest.
It's can they compete? Yes. Can they? Do I trust them to? Hell no.
No. I would never bet anybody's money. I wouldn't bet your money, John, at Oregon State right now this season.
Thank you for not betting my money.
You're welcome. Like, that's just how it's been this year. But I will say this, like, the point spread suggests that this is going to be a game. It's a 3-point spread. Wake Forest is favored. And you look at how they played against Houston. You look at how they played the second half against Appalachian State. Oregon State can definitely be in this game, but they've made so many mistakes all season long. There's no way you can trust them in this situation. And yes, Trent Bray says, you know, the guys are still engaged. They're practicing hard. It's hard for me to imagine, like, everybody's locked in right now after an 0-6 start, coming off the road, just losing to Appalachian State the way you did.
I also think that, you know, I watched enough of Jake Dickert to know that, you know, there's a chance that Wake doesn't play its best game. I think Dickert's at his best when he can get his team emotionally fired up to play against Wisconsin, you know, when he had Oregon, Washington State beating Wisconsin, or the Apple Cup, or he's a very emotional guy. I struggle to see how he's going to fire Wake Forest up for a game against an 0-6 Oregon State team on the road at Research Stadium in front of a smattering of fans. I'm not even going to say that, oh, it's a shame that they scheduled both of these games at 12:30, the Ducks playing 12:30 against Indiana and Wake Forest 12:30 against Oregon State. I just don't think the crowd at Research Stadium is going to be enough to make I-5 a parking lot. Like, you know, it should be. It should be a big problem that these games are kicking off at the same time, but it won't be. Beyond Wake Forest, here's how it goes, though. It's Lafayette at home. That is a winnable game, Steven. That is a very winnable
game. You better win that game.
That is a win.
Not just a winnable, it better be a win.
Then it's Washington State. That, you could win that game. You're in that game. You know, I think Washington State, I'd pick Washington State today, but in 2 weeks, if Oregon State beats Wake Forest, beats Lafayette, I would go, okay, that's a game. Sam Houston going to Oregon State on November 8th. Oregon State should win that game. That's another win.
Yeah, they're 2 of 4 teams that haven't won a game yet in FBS.
Yeah. At Tulsa, the Golden Hurricane. I've been to Tulsa. It's a weird place to play, but this is a Tulsa team that, in its last two times out, got beat 45-7 to Memphis and 31-14 to Tulane. It is not a good team.
But those are two of the better teams in the AAC. They did go on the road and just absolutely crush Oklahoma State. Now, they suck as well. But I think, you know, they have a first-year head coach, Trey Lamb. So we'll see. That I would not say is a must-win game. Like, I expect Oregon State to go and win for sure, but it's definitely winnable.
Then it's Washington State at Washington State, and I would pick Washington State to win at home in that one.
Yeah.
So the way I see it in these final six, what is a good finish for Trent Bray? I think 3-3 or better is a good finish. I think anything less than 3-3, and I think a 2-10 season at the end of the year is a huge downer.
Yeah,
if you're Oregon State.
I put out on Twitter, like, I did the rest of the schedule, like, over under 2.5 wins. I think I'd take the under. I think that's what they're going to get, but you're right. If they finish out with 4 wins, I think it's an excellent end
of the
season.
About 3? If they get 3?
It's fine. But
can he walk through downtown Corvallis with his head high?
No, I don't think so.
Too soon?
They've lost too much trust. 3 is not enough. They got to be better than that.
And he made the comment that, like, you know, the people writing about him not being there and creating uncertainty, you know, look, it's true, people have wrote that and there's some uncertainty there, but you control that as a football coach. Go win games. You know, if they were sitting here at 3-3 instead of 0-6, nobody would be talking about whether or not Trent Bray is going to be the coach next year. You control that. All right, coming up, our big splash. I want you to leave it here. Joe Moglia, former Coastal Carolina head coach and the former CEO of TD Ameritrade, will be joining us top of the hour. Leave it here.